This is the weekly show all about weather. This is Weather Brains, episode number 354. This is for November 5th, 2012. I'm James Spann, getting set to cruise into the holiday season. I'm seeing commercials for Christmas all over television. Thanksgiving is almost here. We've got Kevin Selly here tonight. Kevin, are you ready for Christmas yet?
Not ready, but working on it. I've got my list all made, of course, but I've actually got a couple of gifts in mind for others, so I'm a little bit ahead of the game for a change.
By the way, if you're new, I'm good. If you're new to the show, this is the show just for weather weenies, geeks, dweebs, dorks, nerds, and we talk about weather, and we're going to have a very fascinating show, I think, tonight. We're going to look back on Hurricane Sandy. Kevin Selly is one of our regular panelists who is in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
You know what I did? You mentioned you were kind of giving an explanation of what the show is, and since you mentioned the last couple of weeks, you know, we did all those special episodes for Sandy, and we had a big audience for the last episode, which was with Sandy coming on shore. And so I thought, you know, for all the new listeners, we might ought to have some sort of a primer for them. And so I sent you some audio, James, if you want to play it.
All right. So if you've never heard this show before, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you're getting into.
A quick Weather Brains primer for new listeners. The host of Weather Brains is James Spann, chief meteorologist at ABC 3340 in Birmingham. He worked pretty hard in most of his life, but on this show, all he seems to do is talk up intros and play sound effects. J.B. Elliott is the world's greatest weatherman and the reason most of us are here. He works the hardest, is smarter than the rest of the panel combined, and is the only one who knows all the temperatures in Alaska and Western Canada at a moment's notice. Brian Peters is also Professor Peters, host and writer of the excellent and very educational Weather Brains 101. I'm not quite sure about his title of internationally beloved. I have a friend who lives in China and he has never mentioned him. Bill Murray is the guest booking officer and responsible for all the fantastic guests you hear on the show. Teaching people how to use Google Hangouts is a tough and thankless job, and probably why he continues to play to the camera in spite of my dad's ranting against it. Producer J.P. Spann stays up until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning editing the show. Another thankless job, but he outstripped his dad's performance in his first week by getting the file size down from 7 teraflops to just a few megs. Nate Johnson is a societal impacts and weather technology expert. He is also the email officer for the program, yet another thankless job, which leads to my dad. Kevin Selly now mainly just makes wise guy comments on the show and is chief ranting officer. He was once executive producer, was also the email officer for many years, and I must say, since shedding both of these titles, is now much nicer to have around the house.
Welcome to Weather Brains. Much like the Rush Limbaugh show, it will probably take a few weeks for you to get it. If you still don't like it, they're doing great work over at the Weather Channel, like naming winter storms.
There you go. You learn more about this show than you've ever known before with that. That was fantastic.
Wow. I just thought it was a public service for the new listeners. Everybody else that listens for a while, they know all that already.
For the noobs. All right. Yeah. Well, let's go around the horn. We got producer JP, who's in Starkville, Mississippi. Producer, are you okay over there?
Yes. I'm keeping my laughter to a minimum, but that thankfully for the mute button. I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Doing good. Producer is you heard his role. He's the guy that has to put this show together, and he stays up all night every week, Monday night, editing this program, which is a total nightmare. So we thank you in advance for your tasking, sir.
It is an honor to be here, sir. Thank you.
All right. Now we've got Nate Johnson of Raleigh, North Carolina, WRAL Television. How was your class tonight?
It was very good. We talked about Sandy, recap some of the Sandy coverage, what we liked, what we didn't, and then talked about different some of the weathercasts that they turned in last week and evaluated some of those and started to get into different ways that we can tell weather stories that are interesting and fun and just keep people interested. So it was good class tonight.
Good deal. Brian Peters, the internationally beloved meteorologist.
I don't know where you came up with that. I've only been out of the country like twice.
It's raining at my television station here. Must be raining at your house as well. You're not too far away from me.
Yes, I doubled my November rainfall today. I went from 1300s to 2600s.
I pull these earplugs out. It was pouring rain. All right, so we got a note here from Bill Murray. It says, "I am dead in the water."
That can't be good.
This could be a total disaster because he's the guy that does the show prep.
It's obviously raining harder at his house.
So that means we're going to have to do this without Bill Murray, and I think JB is out as well. So I'm going to task Kevin, I think, with the with some of the hard stuff. But let me bring in Dave Nussbaum, who's down in Baton Rouge. I know Dave. Dave's a friend. Dave, thank you for staying up late. This is past your bedtime, isn't it?
Pretty much, but that's all right.
So tell everybody about your TV station and what you do there.
We're WBRZ-TV down here in Baton Rouge, the morning and noon meteorologist, and I've been down here for about 9 years now, so any hurricane or any kind of storm that's hit down here in the last 9 years, I've been part of that. So didn't expect to see all that moving down here, but it's been a great, fun ride thus far.
And what time do you normally get to work every day?
I rev anywhere between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, so that's coming up pretty quick here.
So you are definitely up past your bedtime.
I am. You know, one of these little cat naps you get in the afternoon go a long way, and so I was able to take advantage of that today before we had our little round of weather down here.
There you go. All right. Let's see. Jeff, are you online with us? Can you hear us?
I can hear you fine.
All right. Now, Jeff's my buddy, but I'm going to get you to say your last name because I'm going to botch it unless you say it. So lay it on us.
Oh, James, it's Petroski. P-I-O-T-R-O-W-S-K-I. There you go.
That's what I was going to say, but Kevin would make fun of me. Now, you are at your home in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you are a chaser. You work with Barron Services. Everybody knows you're like a legend in the weather enterprise. Everybody knows you.
Well, if they don't know me, they should know me, like you, James.
No. Now were you involved in Sandy at all? Were you up there when this thing came in?
Yeah, I was. I went up Thursday late last week and went up there and made landfall and hung around the coast, you know, Jersey coast, and see what people are doing, and went to Battery Park downtown, and then went over to Long Island. And I've got a lot to share with you because what you're seeing on TV is not what reality is happening there today. It's worse than Katrina. It's in my opinion, it's the worst disaster in the U.S. in 30 plus, maybe 70 years. It is an absolute catastrophe up there. Beyond, we don't have enough time today to tell you how bad it is up there. What's going on?
And let me just say, Jeff has been, he has been involved in many, many major weather disasters over the years. This guy knows what he's talking about. So this is going to be good stuff. And let's bring in Ryan Hanrahan. Ryan, can you hear us okay?
I gotcha.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Now what shift do you work at your station?
I do weekend evenings. I've done it for, 7 years now. I grew up in Connecticut, working at the NBC owned station in Hartford, and been there pretty much my whole career. Started a little part-time work up in Albany during grad school, but been in Hartford ever since.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to come on the show this week. And again, we're all going to go around the horn and just talk about Sandy. What went right? What went wrong? What could be done better? But I think I'm going to let Jeff talk for a while. Jeff, you are there in it, and you're saying you think this is worse than Katrina. Just lay it on us. Tell us what you saw.
Well, first of all, a little bit of what went right, and then I'm going to dive into what went wrong. You know, shortly after arriving there on the Jersey coast, I quickly got this impression from talking to the police, the fire, local AMA directors along the Jersey coast, as well as New York, and listen to the media reports and listen to the local meteorologists talk about, here comes Hurricane Sandy. It's going to be a tropical system. It's going to do this phasing. Some of the people on the East Coast didn't realize, you know, what that meant. And a lot of people's attitude was, you know what, we left last year for Irene. We were on the coast. The majority of people, millions of people moved inland, and they actually had worse damage inland and lost power, but on the coast they didn't. So the attitude of most of the people I've talked to, these are ground zero places where people were devastated. And I asked them a question. I said, did you stay or did you leave this time? And 99.99% of the people said they stayed. And I said, why did you stay? They said, you know, last year the media overhyped Irene. And so when it, this year we decided, you know what? It's a tropical storm. It's not a hurricane. That's number one problem. Number two problem was we didn't think it was going to be that bad. It's going to be, kind of a tropical phase. They weren't threatened by it. They said, you know what? It's just a Cat 1. We're not worried about the storm surge. Yeah, we're going to have 4 foot. It's going to be astronomical high tide. We're going to get a little inland flooding, but we think it'll be fine. That's what person after person told me, whether it's Long Beach was under 8 foot of sand and about 11 foot storm surge, whether it's Brady Point where the place burned down, you had 100 homes burned down, whether it's Staten Island, which took a brunt of an extreme surge, storm surge at Staten Island, which was unbelievable, the story of what happened there,
as well as
on the East Coast. Yes, sir.
Before you get too far on the damage, and I want to hear this, but I want to back up to what you said that we were talking about these people. As a percentage of the number of people you talked to, how many said media messed it up last year? We didn't think it was going to be that bad.
I'd say 99% of them told me that.
Really?
Wow. Hmm.
See, I always thought that. I thought that
James Irene, has been saying that for weeks.
This Irene hype was out of control. I mean, you watch these guys last year, and you think it was, you know, World War V coming here, the end of the world. And I really thought that was a problem. And you know, that confirms that. So, well, were there any other? Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, Jeff, then let me change the question and be as honest as you can in real numbers. Is that after asking 5 people or 1,000 people or, you know?
Real numbers, I'd say I'd probably asked over 150 over about a 4-day period.
And you say 90%?
Yeah, over 90%. Wow. All games, wow. It doesn't matter whether they were – doesn't matter whether the janitor or they were the EMA directors or the fire chiefs or policemen. I'm talking about I've all walks of life. And these were people that – some people didn't lose anything. I've talked to a lot of people that lost everything in their home. And I had a number of people tell me – on camera, in person, and they admitted to me. They said, you know what? We made a grave mistake. We didn't think it was going to be that bad. We'll never do this again. Next time they say to evacuate, we're out of here.
This is staggering. Nate, you kind of get into this. Are the societal impacts people kind of, are they aware of this?
I think so. And as a matter of fact, the service assessment team has already been fielded for this, the National Weather Service assessment. My hope is that there are a number of other, you know, say quick response grant type folks. There's the University of Colorado Natural Hazards Center will fund some folks that can go in a quick response way, go in, meet with people right after the disaster, that sort of thing. And you want to get there as quickly as you can, because the longer the longer between the time of the event and when you start talking to them, the stories change. They meld in with things, that they hear from other people. And so their understanding of what's going on can change. But, this will be one of the topics that's brought up, is to what extent the coverage of Irene and the how Irene played out affected that. Having said that, if they find something interesting here, this would be in, I don't want to say conflict, but there's actually published research about hurricanes and false alarms, and the situation that was studied by a couple of researchers, Dow and Cutter, in the late 1990s was very similar to this, a near miss and then a hurricane that came by later, and they interviewed folks, and they're hearing sort of what Jeff was seeing and hearing there.
Well, I'm stunned by that. But I didn't mean to derail you, Jeff. I thought that was important, though, to maybe drill down on that. But you started talking about damage as well.
Okay, can I just jump in here quickly?
Yeah.
Just here in Connecticut, we had a totally different response after Irene. While the Jersey Shore and New York City were virtually unscathed after Irene, we had pretty much every single town had significant storm surge damage from Irene. One town had about, I think it was something on the order of 20 or 25 houses that were swept into Long Island Sound. So when we were talking about Sandy, we sort of used Irene as a benchmark and said, hey, this could actually be worse. So while down in New Jersey and New York, we've heard that a lot from people saying, hey, Irene was totally blown out of proportion, and they thought Sandy was going to be the same thing. Here in Connecticut, people who rode out Irene on the shoreline said, hey, we're not doing that again. We're getting out of here before Sandy comes. So it just shows you how localized the impacts for something like storm surge can be.
And so let me understand too, something, though. Is there a difference between, are you saying there's a difference between Hartford media and New York media, or no?
No, I think it really was the impact of Irene was very localized here in Connecticut, okay. Whereas, you know, somewhere in New York City, I mean, the floodwaters didn't breach any of the levees there, didn't go over the seawalls down at the Battery. So it right. was no big deal. Here in Connecticut, we had entire neighborhoods that were under, you know, 7 or 8 feet of water during Irene. So okay. I think a blanket, you know, Irene was blown out of proportion by the media in some certain areas, of course, was true. But here in Connecticut, people said, you know, hey, we're getting the hell out of here the next time a storm like this comes. So okay. it just shows you how localized it was.
And I'm every sorry, opportunity, Nate. Well, it's okay. And every opportunity, the Weather Service, the Hurricane Center had to make that point. They said that on the whole, Sandy was going to be worse than Irene everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that people who thought that this was going to be just another Irene should, you know, evaluate this storm on its own merits. I heard, you know, both Uccellini and Nab mentioned that they felt like the storm needed to be taken on its own merits. Don't compare it just, oh, it's another Irene, but look at this thing on its own merits. And if what Jeff is hearing is representative of the rest of the population, clearly they didn't do that, and maybe we have an issue.
Yep. Wow. So, Jeff, tell us some more about the damage that you witnessed.
In each area along the coastline, Long Island coastline, if you take the Long Beach area, the damage there was unique in the sense that the amount of sand that came over, talking to the locals, they said the sound side breached first. It came up on the northern shores of the Long Beach first. The locals tell me they saw the manhole covers popping, and they said that came in at around 6:45 to 7 o'clock. They said by 7:35 to 7:40 in the city of Long Beach on the south shore along the piers and the boardwalk that the water started surging in. And they said by 7:45, there was literally, like, the people describe it as a tsunami-like type water surge. They said the water rose 4 feet in about 15 minutes and was surging so fast, if you try to stand out in the street, you would have been knocked down and swept to the north side of the island. That's what I heard from Little Fire Department, Long Beach Fire Department, Long Beach responders, Long Beach people. The thing that amazed me about Long Beach area is that the sand, the storm surge was so intense at Long Beach along the whole coast, is that the sand, when the water went down, the sand was anywhere from 4 feet to as high as 7 feet deep in people's homes, about 4 to 6 blocks inland along Long Beach. So when you come back, in order to find your home, your cars were buried on the first floor, and some of those garages are below ground level, sea level, as well as your first floor houses. That a lot of the houses on the that face the beach, the south walls imploded inward. And when that happened, it allowed the sand and the water to rise anywhere from 6 to 8 feet deep in those homes. And basically, the people are coming back, and their entire house is cased with sand. Their furniture, everything's under sand. So that's in the Long Beach area. When I first arrived the morning after the hurricane, I can tell you the Long Beach Fire Department, Long Beach Little Fire Department, so those guys were begging for gasoline, diesel fuel. They did not have it. They didn't have it for 3 days afterwards. They still didn't they have problems there going into Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. At Lanny Beach, the same story there. They're a little bit better protected at Lanny Beach. They still had water and damage there, but they're a little bit, because they're a little bit higher rise, but they did have damage there. The worst area I went to by far was the stayed away on the southeastern shores of Rockaway, and then also down at Breezy Point. Those places were just devastated. I would probably be safe to say that every home in Rockaway and also Breezy Point was inundated with water. What didn't burn down in Breezy Point was inundated with anywhere from 4 to 7 feet of water across the Outer Banks, had a total storm surge, went across the entire island on the Outer Banks. And then if you drop over to Staten Island, the Jersey area, the Hudson backed up, the Hudson Sound backed up on both the Jersey course, coastline, as well as the New York Harbor side. The water came inland again, anywhere from a quarter to half a mile. It was 4 to 6 feet deep in all the homes and businesses there. Mm-hmm. And then as you go southward, over towards Staten Island was just absolutely obliterated on the south and southeast coastline. Again, storm surge, 4 to 6 feet deep. There's a crest here on the southeast side of Staten Island. There's a crest, the sand dunes. And as you crest that sand dune, the road dips back downward. drops, it drops downward about 4 to 6 feet. So about a half mile in from the coastline, you actually go lower. There's a kind of a sand dune around the south and east side of Staten Island. You drop down, and as you come in on about a half mile, you rise rapidly back up again. So you have this big dip around the southeast side of Staten Island. Most of those homes are, again, 4 to 11 feet of water. I saw water lines up to the roof lines in Staten Island. They also had a number of fatalities there. Women with their two baby kids were washed off the road there, and Staten Island was really, really bad.
Hey, did you see any evidence? This has fascinated me ever since I read the Isaac's Storm book back in the 1900 Galveston hurricane. Mm-hmm. And they talked about the storm surge comes in, takes out the first row of buildings, which becomes a moving dam of debris, yep. which further takes out the second row, which adds to the dam. I've seen one or two pictures of that. Did you see much of that?
Yeah, positively. Definitely Staten Island, you saw that. And also on the Jersey Shore, you saw that. From Seaside all the way down to Atlantic City, that absolutely happened there. And also you could see that same evidence on the Brady Point is also Staten Island on the south side of the beach there. You could see that same evidence that happened at that location as well. Breezy Point, that happened, as well as the on over to Long Beach, it happened. But it was the worst, definitely, in Staten Island area. Staten Island, there was a boat harbor over there on the southeast side that was obliterated. I mean, gone, decimated. And it took all the boats. These are huge boats, probably 100-footers. These are big boats, big sailboats. And it pushed them inland about a quarter mile on the northwest coast. So not only did they come across the bay, they also went inland about a quarter mile. And literally, some of them were on top of houses on the southeast side of town. So they rose about 15 to 20 feet, and then the water receded, and they were settled on top of houses on the southeast side of Staten Island.
You said when we started that you thought it was 10 times worse, or whatever you said, than what is being shown on the media. And I don't mean this as a knock on media, but sure. Why do you think that is? Is there just too much to show?
I think there's too much to show. I think at the end of the day, I think there's a couple things. I'm not saying, you know, I'm definitely going to alienate people when I say this, but I think there's a couple things. There's two or three things that critically happened at critical times that I think led to an underestimation of what was getting ready to happen. I think as far as model and the forecasters, as we know in the business, I think it did it awesome. European nailed it. GFS did an awesome job. Hurricane Center, I give them an A+ on the track and the timing and the location. I still think there's going to be a debate about whether they should have issued hurricane watches or warnings. I personally feel like there should have been, if you wasn't going to issue a hurricane warning, I would have probably hit the storm surge more like a Cat 2, hit that harder. But I still think there should have been a hurricane warning. I think that would have made people feel they needed to move inland and get away from the coastline. Because there was not a warning in effect, people let their guard down. That's my personal opinion, interviewing and talking to people on the coastline. I think the other problem is that the damage is so enormous over such a large area that I think, as well as local emergency management and as well as the state and the government, I think they're overwhelmed. All resources are overwhelmed. I can tell you on Friday and Saturday, I try to get out of New York to fly back home to Tulsa. I saw gas lines anywhere from 4 to 7 miles long. I can tell you as of today, getting a lot of reports out of the same places I visited 48 hours ago, it's almost near riot conditions now on part of the Outer Banks. I know that there are some government people, the mayors of a couple cities, Bloomberg went down to some of their damage areas today, and it was almost a revolt at that location this afternoon. It was bad. It was real bad. People are fed up. You've got tens of thousands of people in high-rise buildings. They have no water. They have no heat. They've had no food for 7 days. The American Red Cross, even though they're a wonderful organization, I didn't see nobody there for 5 days after the hurricane. That goes from Long Beach all the way through New York City, including the Battery Park area, including Staten Island, including the Eastern Shores. You did not see Red Cross roll in those areas until sometime Saturday afternoon, started doing handouts. But here's the problem is, even if today, Red Cross is late yesterday and as well as today, they say we've got feeding centers. But the problem is 99% of the people in that area don't have phone service. They don't have, you can't text, you can't email. They have no TV. They have no way of knowing. They're in their cold, damp, wet house. They have no way of knowing that 3 miles down the road, there's a feeding center. Well, guess what? I don't have a car to get down there and nobody's telling me about it because I'm stuck in a five five-story, 10-story high-rise building. That's reality. In my opinion, you've got almost a half a million people been affected. The governor of New York declared today there is a massive shortage of housing for all New York City. I'm thinking this thing's going to displace a half a million people along the coastline that are going to have their homes totally rebuilt, whether it's temporary for 2 months out of place or they're going to be out of place for a year or more. That's the kind of stuff that's going on up there that I witnessed and I saw and still ongoing today. Fox did a news deal today. This is their words, not mine, but I did say it on Sunday before the hurricane made landfall. An ABC reporter caught me in Battery Park about 3 o'clock on Sunday. She goes, what do you think is going to happen? And I told her, you know, when you ask me a question, I'm going to give you an honest answer. I said, it's going to be one of the worst hurricanes in U.S. history, and it's going to have catastrophic storm surge from the southern tip of Long Island across Jersey Shore, and that's what's going to happen. The lady cut me off, and she says, you know, well, what are you up here chasing for? I said, because it's going to be the most historic, you know, event in U.S. history. And I actually used the word, you know what, this is going to turn into Obama's Katrina. And that's what Fox News said tonight. They go, this is turning into Obama's Katrina. He was up there for 1 or 2 days to see the people, and then all of a sudden he's gone now, and the disaster is still unfolding. I mean, they've got huge problems in the Northeast. Did you know on two of the nights, I couldn't find a hotel within 500 miles of New York City? And if you did want a hotel, it was about $500 to $600 a night, which normally they put them online for about $200 a night.
How did you support yourself while you were there? You mentioned the hotels.
We don't have enough time to tell you everything I did. I literally slept in the lobby of one hotel one night. I slept in the car one night. We had water and gasoline. I had 4 or 5 gallon tanks in the back of the car for gas emergency, which I needed every drop of it. It was tough, guys. I mean, it was brutal. Another thing about this hurricane was really unusual, Nate. You'll appreciate this, all the weather guys. On the backside, when we got down to the eye down at Cape May and down the southern tip of Jersey, was making landfall late Monday. We were at 51 degrees and the winds gusting to 50 to 60 miles an hour. It's one of the coldest hurricanes I've ever chased. But as we got back north up to near Atlantic City when the eye was coming ashore, we actually warmed back up, went to kind of partly cloudy skies. It's still 90% cloudy. And we went back up to 64 degrees. We actually warmed 14 degrees as we got closer back in the eye. But on the southwest side of it, man, it was cold. And it was miserable. I mean, it's the coldest hurricane I've ever chased. I mean, it was just plumb miserable.
So if some people are saying this is President Obama's Katrina, why is there not the same coverage of that? And maybe I'm missing it. Maybe there is, or maybe there's not this one focal
election. Get this election over with, and I predict in 48 hours, 72 hours, no matter which way the election goes, that you're going to see that spigot turn wide open on how bad it is up there.
Do you think that there was any, there was a big dust up over the weekend with regard to the marathon, and the mayor said yes, and did somebody tamp that down over the weekend?
Oh, let me tell you about that situation. I was in Staten Island on Saturday, and Friday night and Saturday, and in Staten Island, when the governor had showed up there and military had showed up, when they saw people out there and thought they were news media, there were literally clans of people saying they were outraged beyond belief. People were screaming and yelling. I mean, it was almost a revolt at Staten Island on Saturday about the marathon taking place. They were furious beyond. I mean, they were outright livid. I mean, beyond. I mean, they were. It was bad. I'm telling you guys, it was bad. It's some of the worst stuff I've ever seen.
Wow. So, Ryan, what's the mood up in the Northeast now with the next forecast here?
Well, if we get snow on Wednesday night, it will be a little interesting twist here. More typical than a hurricane this time of year, I guess. But, you know, we've seen the gas lines, people driving from New Jersey all the way up into Connecticut, which is probably a 90-minute drive or so to get gas. And there have been gas shortages here. And just, you know, if you're not familiar with the area down in Fairfield County, it's one of the wealthier parts of Connecticut, the town of Greenwich, which is the first town over the New York line. We just learned this morning, 500 homes on the water in Greenwich. And this is not cheap real estate. And you're talking about $2, 3, 4, 5 million plus homes, 500 homes uninhabitable because of the flooding.
Wow.
And we're just beginning to get a sense of, unlike Irene, where you had a few of the beach homes that were just swept away, in this case, it appears we're looking at the water made it so far inland. There's a number of homes that they were compromised structurally, and it's going to be a long time before the rebuilding process begins. But just in terms of economic impact, I mean, this is going to be huge. And from what we're hearing, too, down on Long Island, in Westchester, in New Jersey, There might be whole parts of towns that will be unable to get electricity back for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, because there's no infrastructure left that has to be built back up. So not good for sure. And, you know, to sort of echo some of the things that Jeff has been saying, we've had crews down in New York. We've been traveling all over. Same thing. Just, you know, unbelievable suffering in some of those areas like Staten Island, out toward the Rockaways. And in portions of New Jersey, too, Hoboken, which is right across from Midtown Manhattan, same kind of thing.
So is there a sense of increased nervousness for this Wednesday-Thursday storm?
I think a little bit. I think one of the issues is I was down in Rhode Island today covering the cleanup there. We went down to the first town over the Connecticut border. There's no dunes left. And normally the dunes would be about 7 or 8 feet high. When you go on to some between the beaches and the road and the businesses, there's nothing left. They were just totally wiped away. So, you know, even if we're looking at a 3 or 4 foot storm surge from this nor'easter, we're not quite sure how much damage that would do. We're sort of in uncharted territory there because there was just so much damage to the beaches across, you know, really all of New England from Rhode Island and then down into portions of New York and New Jersey.
So, Dave, in Louisiana, does the memory of Katrina fade, and are people less likely to pay attention? And how long will that last? How long will the memory of Sandy last in New York by comparison?
Well, I think a lot of what's happening down here is just people trying to grasp what happened up there. This, you know, hurricanes hit the Gulf Coast, what, once every 2-3 years. And for us, though, it's, you know, something that's common, and we deal with it. We know how to prepare for it. And when you hear the stories of the non-preparation and, you know, everyone was not aware of what was going on, you kind of think about what happened with Katrina and some of the thoughts down there with New Orleans was people thought, oh, this is no big deal. We've rode through hurricanes before. We're going to be fine until, of course, the levees broke, and we all know what happened there. But the biggest thing trying to explain to people down here is more so of they're not used to it up there. I grew up in the Northeast. I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and, you know, would go out east all the time. Been in New York and those areas too. And just actually was up in Atlantic City 3 weeks ago for a buddy of mine's wedding, and to be able to walk the boardwalk and everything. Glad I did, because parts of it, of course, aren't there anymore. And trying to explain people down here, our weekend meteorologist too, he's from actually Long Island, New York. And, you know, they know what a hurricane is. They remember Gloria. They remember Bob, you know, and even some before that too. And even Irene, of course. But for them to get a hurricane kind of goes right up the coastline, right into Long Island. Doesn't usually take that turn and hit the Jersey coast. And, you know, down here, I guess people are just trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, we have problems too. You know, Katrina, we took days, weeks, months to get, you know, power back and resources down here. It wasn't an election year, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it. We had issues, you know, with our governor and stuff at the times too, but it seems like, you know, we want to do what we can to help. We've been there. We've been through it. You know, here's what you need to do. But going back to what you were saying earlier, Jeff, about them not being prepared, I had friends of mine emailing and calling me saying, how bad is this really going to be? Because we're not scared. You know, they're not scaring us. You know, down here, when Katrina hits, that was my first hurricane working down here was Ivan. Of course, James is very familiar with that one in Gulf Shores. And then you had Katrina and then Rita. And, you know, now it's, you know, to tell us, the big thing I told everyone who didn't want to leave New Orleans that I knew when Katrina hit was, do you remember Camille? And a lot of the older folks did. And I said, this is going to be worse.
That's fascinating, though. Does that mean
that?
I'm sorry, you dropped out for just a second. But I'm fascinated by that. Does that mean that people are asking to be scared in a way? And then when they were during the one that didn't pan out, that turned out not to be a good thing. So it seems to fly in the face. Those things seem to fly in the face of each other. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's down here. I mean, I guess they're accustomed to it. You know, we had Isaac earlier this year, and we know the headaches along here on the Gulf Coast that took forever to become a hurricane. Then when it finally did, it strengthened a little more before on shore, and it took a full 24 hours to cross over Baton Rouge. And, you know, the big thing was telling everyone, look, this, you know, we've been through these before, you know, we're not going to see Gustav type conditions here, but do expect to see a lot more rain out of this. And I guess every hurricane Alabama has its own characteristics and own little thing. You can't really compare one to the next. But down here, and my friends, at least up there, were saying, you know, I'm not scared of this. Should I be? And maybe that's where they're not so experienced up there. Nothing against the weather guys, because they do a great job, but maybe they're just not used to doing that.
Wow.
And it may not be a, you know, it may not be such a do I need to be scared kind of thing, but you have no frame of reference to hang this stuff on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to talk about storm surge, but unless you've lived it, unless you've seen it, it's really hard to describe in a way that people can connect with, especially if you're, you know, in New York and you've never seen this sort of thing before. I mean, it's flooding, but it's worse, and it moves very quickly and it does a lot of damage, but it's not just your normal, hey, we got a little too much rain kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be a really important, potentially an important research question to ask out of this, is to what extent can the media and others help people who have never been through anything like this visualize or somehow internalize what it's going to look like afterwards. And I think that's where, if you go back to, there are two examples of this where this, I think this was done well. Number one was the doomsday PNS from the Slidell office ahead of Katrina. Very black and white language. This is what the world is going to look like after this is over. That was one. The second was one of the briefings that I saw from the Mount Holly office. And this was great. He said, you know, the briefing text was, if you're thinking about sticking around, ask somebody who lived through the 62 storm if they do it again. And I thought that was really brilliant, because for the people who did, that's a very clear thing. Now, for those who didn't, they still have no frame of reference, but maybe they can connect with someone they trust who lived through that, who can tell them, hey, look, buddy, this ain't what you want to deal with.
I agree with you, Nate.
We hit on something that kind of pushes me into this, and I'm going to be accused of beating a dead horse, but I'm going to do it anyway and go down the panel, and Dave, we'll start with you.
Go ahead.
I know. That's what I do, right? With regard to the naming of winter storms and the Weather Channel, and we've had two missed opportunities for them to do that, and I haven't heard anything that suggests they're going to name this thing later on in the week, but with regard to this storm, which started out very quickly as Frankenstorm, and then that seemed to be the whether you liked it or not, that very quickly on social media became the accepted name of what this thing was going to be.
It died down,
in my opinion, because the national news media, other than the Weather Channel, which I guess never picked it up, but they didn't like it. They decided it was flippant and it wasn't serious enough. And then so we went off into Superstorm Sandy or several different things, which in a way sort of argues for some consistency on this, which is one of the points we made about, you know, the Weather Channel doing that, but not on an island. But Dave, you go ahead and you make your comment there, and we'll move down the line on that.
Well, I think what are the characteristics? And I think that's the biggest argument. I mean, I've read the report from the Weather Channel. I've read the, you know, things I've seen online and through Facebook and whatnot. But what exactly constitutes this storm that's coming up this week? You know, does this fit the description of what they want to be, Athena or whatever the first name is? I think it's going to cause some confusion. I mean, I think, you know, the national media may or may not run with it. If they do, NBC looks like a genius, I guess, because now they have the entire everything marketed across the board. As myself, I would, you know, tell my station we're ABC. Let's not give them more, you know, positive reinforcement that they need. But I think it's going to be confusing. I know growing up in the Great Lakes, they used to name winter storms up there, you know, back in the day, and then they had to stop doing that.
Let me jump to Ryan then, who's in that area. I mean, I guess you could argue it's everybody knew the thing was there. Does the name, you know, in this case, would a name cause some confusion or not? But you're closer to it. Did it?
I think it sort of goes back to the issue with the Hurricane Center not issuing warnings in the first place. I mean, I think the coverage would have been totally different if the forecast was a high-end Cat 1, low-end Cat 2, making landfall in New Jersey. if that was what the forecast was, I think the entire the coverage would have been a lot different than, you know, cute names like Frankenstorm or Superstorm or Odd Hybrid Weird Storm. I think we've done such a good job as a community getting toward impact-based statements, impact-based warnings, and then we just got so caught up in semantics trying to, I was watching some coverage, some national media coverage, some local coverage, not just here, but in New York too, spending 60 seconds of a 3-minute weathercast explaining why it wasn't going to be a hurricane. I think we just totally, name or no name, that was just the worst possible thing we could have done. Our station, we sort of just decided this is a hurricane to us. We're calling it a hurricane straight through landfall. We don't care what if the Hurricane Center calls it post-tropical, becoming extra-tropical, not a warning, not even going to get into it, impact-based all the way. That's what we did. I think it worked. But I think the message was much more difficult to discern in other places that didn't do that.
I think it's a really interesting point because that is consistent. I did a little digging and with the help of a colleague up at the Weather Network, Gina Ressler, the Canadians, from whom, by the way, we borrow the post-tropical cyclone nomenclature for these things. The Canadians will, number one, they'll post and keep the hurricane warnings up all the way through landfall and beyond because that just seems the most consistent for the way they handle things. And at the end of the day, it used to be a hurricane. It's a tropical origin. It may be transitioning or it may have transitioned, but for them, it's already a hurricane. Let's keep it that way. Now, they do change the name. They'll call it post-tropical storm Sandy, but they keep the hurricane warnings up. The Canadians didn't issue hurricane warnings until 2004. Before that, whenever they'd have one of these come on shore, they'd use the impact-based warnings of coastal flooding and high wind and that sort of thing. And they stopped because some research found after some hurricanes in 2003 that the response was, quote, lackadaisical at best, end quote, which to me at least puts a data point in favor of, there's a lot of conversation about, well, yes, the warnings were valid and we warned on impacts and yeah, you did. And those warnings, verified, but are they getting the kind of response that we needed? And I'm not sure that they did. And the Canadian experience seems to point to no.
So, Jeff, you want to weigh in on this names thing and we'll start wrapping up, I guess.
I think it is what it is. I wish we would have had hurricane warnings out for this storm. I think it would have had a different impact. I think more people would have left the coastline because it would have taken the danger as being more impact. As far as names go, I think it's going to confuse people. It's definitely a NBC, Weather Channel, Comcast, Bain Crapple. It's a way to promote their digital media broadcast. We'll see how it plays out. It's either going to be really brilliant or it's going to be a flop. One of the two is going to happen.
Yeah. James, we got some other stuff to do, or you want to keep going?
Yeah, one more thing here. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to give a little brief pause and not hit the buzzer. And I'm going to just go around the panel, and most major media outlets have pretty much gone on record suggesting that this storm, if not was caused by climate change, was made intense by climate change. And again, I'm going to lay off the buzzer for everybody to go around the horn. And let me just say this. I think this piece, in fact, I'm going to put it up on the screen, is a really good read. And it doesn't matter if you are, a firm believer that we're having catastrophic man-made global warming that's going to take the planet down, or if you think the whole thing is a scam. No matter where you stand in this, it was written by Eric Berger of the Houston Chronicle, and I thought it was a very well-written piece. It is devoid of, as he says here, climate advocacy and denialism, and he goes into a really long, well-written article about this. And, in Bloomberg, it said it's global warming stupid. I guess you guys saw that headline. Well, his point is it's science, stupid. And he says science tells us this is not a new normal. Science tells us climate change has not made a discernible impact on global hurricane activity. So let me just go around the horn. And what do you guys think about this whole issue? So let me just start with Ryan. Ryan, you're up there. What do you say?
I mean, I haven't really seen any peer-reviewed literature that indicates that global warming is leading to an increase in hurricane activity. I've seen some stuff that says, you know, sunstorms may become less intense, maybe less frequent too, but there's certainly no consensus there. And, you know, to be honest, I'm a firm believer in, you know, human-caused global warming, but, you know, I don't see the connection here, and I think we do a disservice by pegging each and every extreme event on global warming. I mean, look at the 1938 hurricane. 75 years ago, it was clearly, if it struck today, would be substantially worse than what we saw from Sandy. So,
but these guys that forecast the facts, they're going to say that you're a denier and you're being funded by big oil just to say that.
It's not me, but they may. But I mean, you know, point me to the, you know, to the literature. I mean, even if you look at the IPCC report, it doesn't draw a conclusion between, you know, man-made global warming and an increase in tropical cyclone activity. So, I think the media, you know, in some respects, just sort of cherry picks extreme weather events and takes whatever's extreme of the day, extreme weather du jour, and sort of pegs it on global warming, regardless of what the actual science says.
Hey, yeah. Jeff, what say you?
You're gonna get me in trouble here.
Go ahead. That's what we do on this show.
Well, first of all, let's go back to Bloomberg and some of his statements. He couldn't get it right 24 hours before the thing made landfall, saying it wasn't a tropical event, no need to evacuate. Then 24 hours from the event, he says, okay, let's evacuate zone A, when he should have been saying, let's evacuate zone A, B, and C. Because the science, I don't know who's on his team leading his team, but boy, he needs a change there for sure.
Al Gore.
Oh my God. Anyway, I agree with what Matt and those other guys saying. There's not a direct link between a global warming and a single catastrophe event. There never has been, never will be. We don't have enough science, enough data worldwide to suggest otherwise. Are the ice caps melting? Yes. I think there's other things going on. I think globally, the Earth is in constant flux. And if you have a drought in one part of the world, you're going to have heavy rains in another part of the world. The Earth is constantly trying to balance itself, is the way I look at things. I think that's where I stand. I think the Earth is constantly trying to equalize itself worldwide. And if things are going bad on one side of the world, it's trying to compensate it for another part of the world. Just like equatorial Pacific, the water's warmer or cooler than normal for El Nino, La Nina. But I think global warming as a whole, I think it's I don't buy into a lot of the arguments, especially when they take a single event and try to talk to global warming. There's no science behind that at all.
Hey, Dave, what do you say about it?
Well, I think it's you know, I really don't see that either. The big thing is I think the technology has really been more advanced, and you know, there's sensors they use, whether in the hurricane hunter planes or whatever the drop suns, or you know, there's a lot more sensitivity to them. You know, I've heard even Dr. Nabb down the Hurricane Center even speak somewhere along that topic too, where it's like things have changed, and things that weren't necessarily as strong 10, 15 years ago, maybe just 5 years ago, maybe stronger today, even they don't look very much, very similar to what they did back in the day there. So, you know, the global warming thing, you can't just, as Jeff was saying, pinpoint one thing to just, oh, because of that, it was so big, it was a hybrid storm that turned into this and that, and Nor'easter ate the hurricane that's never happened before. So, you know, this global warming is the only way to explain it. And, you know, and of course, I think Hollywood has also had a big part in this too, you know, giving people's opinions, explaining one thing or another. But, you know, I think, you know, the technology has changed. You know, that's allowed people to, I guess, come up with these theories. The data's there. I mean, I guess if you go through it more and more, you know, to figure out what it is.
Hey, Nate, was it global warming stupid that caused this?
I want to hang off something that Ryan said, and I wish I could take credit for this, but this actually is from a meteorology professor at NC State, Dr. Gary Lackman. We were talking to him last week about this, and he said, you know, people don't want complex answers to complex problems. We want simple answers to complex problems.
Amen.
But this is a complex issue. It is not a, you can't just sum it up in one soundbite. And as he said, people want to look for a villain. They want to be able to blame something when bad things happen. And we look for the villain of the day, the villain du jour, as Ryan said, this is, and this is the convenient guy. It's the convenient boogeyman. If you look at it, though, the IPCC, the peer-reviewed research, all of this seems to point to the idea that global warming, you can't hang just one, you know, one storm solely off global warming. Did it? Could it have made Sandy worse in some way? Probably. Is it possible that the little added heat in the Gulf Stream may have made it a little bit worse? Possibly. Has the sea level rise over the last few decades in New York, did that make the storm surge a little bit worse? Yes. But it would have still been bad. Even if we'd had zero global warming in the last 30 years, Sandy would still have been a monster, and we'd still be talking about Sandy today.
Kevin, what do you say?
I don't know what to add. I think it's just kind of unfortunate, but it goes to what Nate was saying. People, especially in the national media, they need a quick answer and an easy answer. What frustrates me is the lack of understanding. Is in this particular case, you know, I think a lot of the people that didn't know thought it was just a hurricane. They didn't understand the dynamics of the trough coming in, which helped make this thing stronger. I think there's a fundamental, and I think the marketing side of the man-made global warming side of this did a masterful job in changing or massaging, or how do I say it, taking out the man-made part of it. That's not the way to say it. People say global warming, but that's not really the question. I mean, we all know that all of us that pay attention know that the overall temperature of the planet has fluctuated over however long it's been around, and we're going to continue to have these fluctuations. The real question is, was it man-made or not? And that question gets lost, I guess, because it's too complicated. And I'm making it more complicated by not making the sense, so I'm just going
to
move on.
And to an extent, I think what you're going at, Kevin, is the notion of framing and how this problem has been framed.
Right.
You know, and if you look at how, for example, if you go and ask a room full of people their thoughts on global warming and you use those terms, you'll get a different response than if you say climate change. And let's leave the man-made out of this for a second. Just using those two sets of words will get you different answers.
Right.
So, you know, depending on how those terms, you know, global warming has been loaded by the, you know, the Al Gores of the world, whereas climate change seems to be a little more palatable and people are more willing to acknowledge that that sort of thing is happening because it has been framed as such that it's something that at least partway is natural variation. It may include some man-made stuff too, but you know, one of the issues I think that causes this to be such a hot button issue is that it's very hard to talk about it and not call into question values that we as Americans hold dear. You know, it wasn't, hey, we're changing the planet. It's you with the SUV, you're ruining the planet for your children. And that that's an off-putting message.
Yep. All right. Well, enough of that. The buzzer. And people ask, why do you not talk about it? Well, the truth is, nobody's going to change their mind. There's nothing we're going to say here that's going to make people change their mind. And for Joe Q Public, generally speaking, if they're a conservative, they don't buy into it. If they're a liberal, they're all over it. People are not going to change their mind. It is polarizing. People get hate and anger and rage. It tears people apart. And I think at this phase, we need to work on things that pull us together. And this, I just don't want to go there. So the buzzer rule is back. And having said that, we're going to and I got more questions for everybody here, but we got to take a quick break. We're going to do Professor Peters and Weather Brains 101. We're going to come back with, and Bill is not here, so we're not going to have a This Week in Weather History. We'll do a little quick update on this new nor'easter and some thoughts on that. We've got the email inbox, the fog bank, picks of the week, much more as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
Last week we talked about the three major
circulation patterns and describe the Hadley cell. So this week, we'll look at the Ferrell and polar cells. The Ferrell cell is the name given to a mid-latitude mean atmospheric circulation cell. In this cell, the air flows poleward and eastward near the surface, and equatorward and westward at higher levels. This circulation pattern was named for William Ferrell, who first theorized this feature. This cell depends heavily on both the polar and Hadley cells. In the polar cell, air rises, diverges, and travels toward the poles. Once over the poles, the air sinks, forming polar highs. At the surface, air diverges outward from the polar highs. Surface winds in the polar cell are easterly, sometimes referred to as polar easterlies. Between each of these circulation cells are bands of high and low pressure at the surface. The high pressure band is located about 30 degrees north and south latitude, and at each pole. Low pressure bands are found at the equator and at about 50 to 60 degrees north and south latitudes. Usually, fair and dry or hot weather is associated with high pressure, with rainy and stormy weather associated with low pressure. Another fascinating element in the overall weather patterns that surround our planet. You can send your weather questions to question@weatherbrains.com.
All right, guys, up on the board here, people watching this live, we have the GFS output, and this is valid this is late Wednesday night, showing a 990 millibar low that's a little southeast of Cape Cod. Let me toss it up to Ryan. Ryan, you're up there in the battle zone here. What's your thought on this next nor'easter?
Well, I mean, it's a little early to say, unfortunately. We've been sort of dealing with Sandy's cleanup. This one sort of jumped right on us. At this point, I mean, it does look like it's going to get a little cold enough that we could see some snow. In fact, some of the 12Z models actually had decent sleet and freezing rain signature, which is the last thing that the power companies around here want to be dealing with. So yeah, it looks like some snow, some wintry precipitation, but nothing that we can't handle up here, especially in some of the hill towns. I'm just looking at the new GFS is coming in too. It looks a little bit too far east, sort of going off of Nantucket for a big event around here, but it looks like we'll see something. And the winds and the coastal flooding, as I mentioned earlier in the show, something that we're worried about.
Hey Jeff, what do you think about this new nor'easter?
Well, I think this morning's data was a lot more scarier, if you want to use that term, because some of the models were dumping out, believe it or not, upwards of 12 to 18 inches along the coastline of New Jersey. I think that's an exact, you know, that's overdone. But if you look at the new data tonight, the 18Z and as well as the 0Z coming in now, it's a little bit farther east with the storm as it develops and intensifies. So I think the snow is probably maybe a little bit less of an impact than it looked like earlier today. And on the eastern, especially Jersey and Long Island, it's going to be more of a heavy rain and maybe some 30 to 40 mile an hour winds. But if you believe the European and the Canadian, we've got big problems. If those models continue, we'll see what the trend is tonight on the European. But if the European verifies, we've got big problems on the Jersey coast and Long Island with high winds and heavy rain and some snow on the backside if the European verifies.
Yep, and again, up on the screen right now, that is the new OZ GFS. And there's been a clear shift to the east with this thing. And let's hope that keeps up, because the last thing they need up there is something like that. And obviously, that's the big news in terms of what's going on around the nation over the next few days. Having said that, though, Jeff, real quick, your thoughts on severe weather for the Great Plains this coming Sunday. That would be November 11th.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at that earlier, James, and you were talking about that next trough digging in, and it the low-level jet goes up to about 50, 60 knots here in the plains and brings up the 60 dew points, and it looks like there's actually, I'm impressed with Saturday. It looks like late in the day, maybe near 0Z or after 6 p.m., might have some scattered supercells from central Kansas, Wichita, across western Oklahoma on the dry line, and then as the upper trough digs in and starts going from a positive tilt to more of a neutral and then becomes negatively tilted on Sunday into Monday as it goes into the Missouri Valley. It looked like Saturday night late into Sunday, there's a line of storms come through Oklahoma and eastern Kansas. Maybe some snow in central Kansas, trying to hit at that. And then who knows, the thing goes negative Tulton and heads toward the Boot Hill, Missouri. Maybe some storms over in your neck of the woods, James, Monday afternoon.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty interesting. Things are heating up. And speaking of heating up, we've got to check that email inbox. And, that thing might be ready to explode. I don't know here.
Letters. We get letters.
right. Nate is our email officer.
It only counts if you dance. I love it. A couple of emails from folks. So one I want to lead off with, and a sentiment with which I agree wholeheartedly. This is from Tyler Constantini, who says, to all the meteorologists, computer scientists, physicists, and everyone else who developed the numerical weather prediction models over the years, thank you. Thank you, thank you. Because, and you look at the performance, and we rag on the GFS, but it even it and its performance would have been humongously good 10, 20 years ago. So really a big thank you to everybody who's developing those models, doing research on those models, and helping to improve those over time. And a thank you to you, and I salute you on behalf of the Weather Brains crew. A couple of emails from our Estonian connection, one of which, very interesting, he tables it a crazy idea, is the name of the title, talking about the idea of a three-component dimensionless sum that accounts for sustained winds, the radius of tropical storm force winds, and central pressure, essentially a stab at a replacement for the Saffir-Simpson scale. And if you'd like some more information, shoot us an email. We'll put you in touch with Tarmo. Email from Suzanne Watkins, a listener from New Jersey. She and her family did well. She has a guest suggestion for us, and also spent some time detailing their experience. In a nutshell, they were without power for 36 hours. Their boat did okay, but some of the other boats in that particular harbor did not do so well, but were certainly glad to hear from you and hear that you are doing okay, and certainly hope that the rest of our listeners and viewers now can say the same, that you're doing fine. A couple of guest suggestions. Of course, Suzanne sent one. Justin Dill sent a couple. We appreciate those. Michael W. Moss sent one. We appreciate those. And the guest booking officer has already started to line some of those folks up. So we appreciate that. We have a listener survey response from north of the border, ladies and gentlemen, Victoria, British Columbia, in the great, Canada. I don't know if it's a Commonwealth, a country. Forgive me. Somebody will correct me. But in the great country of Canada, we'll leave it at that. We appreciate your listening and appreciate you taking the time to send us a note to let us know what you think. We certainly encourage that. And sort of scanning through to see what else is in here. I think that's all I'm going to cover this week. We'll pick up some of the other emails in the next in the coming weeks, but appreciate all of those. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so in many ways. You can tweet at us using @WeatherBrains or the hashtag WeatherBrains. You can send us an email if you'd like, email@weatherbrains.com, or you can head over to the Facebook page. You guessed it, WeatherBrains, all one word. Give us a shout. Let us know what you're thinking about to what we're doing, or if you have questions for our guests, things like that. We'd love to hear from you. And James,
we had a tweet from Sydney, Australia, before the show tonight. I thought that was kind of cool. They were waiting for the live show to begin. And I would assume it's the middle of the day over there. And, of course, they are getting set to go into summer. So that's cool. And by the way, we're kind of watching the hashtag WeatherBrains on Twitter. And before we do the picks of the week real quickly, here's a question I thought that was interesting, since we still have a lot of people with no power. And maybe somebody on the panel knows this. I do not. Has a presidential election ever been canceled or postponed by weather? Anybody know?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. I did a little bit of digging with this last week at the request of somebody in the station, and I can't remember a situation where a presidential election was delayed. However, local elections have been and will be delayed for various local and regional situations. But in terms of a national election of national scope electing president, to my knowledge, that has never been delayed. Although somebody pointed out 9/11, I believe, was a primary election day in New York City. And of course, we had the Super Tuesday outbreak back in 2008. That was primaries for a number of states. I'm not sure if any of those were affected directly or not, but that does happen from time to time, typically on a local or state level, but not at a national level yet.
Okay, cool. As a matter of fact, I don't believe the
presidential election can be canceled because it's not conducted on the federal level.
Oh,
yeah. It's all conducted by states.
I don't believe there is any precedence for the presidential election to be canceled.
Hmm. Brian Peters is our statesman here. We're going to take a, well, let's do the fog bank, and we're going to come back with picks of the week as weather. And by the way, for all of our guests, you got to come up with something weather related as your pick. All right. This can be a website. This can be hardware, software, anything weather related. Let's start with Skydaver.
Michael, I'm getting some unusual readings.
Hello, Weather Brains listeners. This is the fog bank for November 5th, 2012. Find my picks of the week at skydaver.blogspot.com. First up, livescience.com has a good multi-day time lapse of the growth of Sandy coming from GOES 13. When they first posted the video, they said it was from the ISS, which just couldn't be. Second, WeatherBrains listener Mike Moss has a podcast talking about retiring Sandy. Third, from the National Hurricane Center, a loop of the five-day cone for Sandy. Fourth, I've got something from the University of Wisconsin Space Science and Engineering Center. It's a video made of the one-minute fast scan of Sandy, covering October 25th through the 31st. I'll close out with a great lightning photo from the Earth Science Picture of the Day. Thanks for listening. Skydaver out.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right, now let me share my pick, and I'm going to have to do what I sometimes do. I have to walk across the hall and do some television. I'm going to turn it over to Kevin Sellis.
Hey,
or is
hey,
that Selly?
I need to get paid for these now. Starting.
Hey,
with this.
Yeah. All right, I'll double your pay. Hey, yeah. Listen, my pick. It is the piece in the Houston Chronicle that I mentioned that I thought was a very well done piece, not involving politics or, you know, this partisan stuff about the connection with Sandy and climate. So that will be my pick, and we're going to have all these picks up on weatherbrains.com. Having said that, I'm going to walk across the hall, freshen my pancake makeup, and do some television. So Kevin is now in charge of this program. So we'll see if
finally
it goes down the tubes, yes.
Yeah, now we can get some things done on this program for a change. Yeah. Okay, well, let's go down the line. Brian Peters, you got a pick of the week, sir?
I do, but before I leave the topic of Sandy, I didn't get a chance to state this, but I thought this is an interesting point here.
Please do.
The reason I had this thought is because of the things that Jeff was saying. It dawned on me that I wonder if the lack of a warning from the National Hurricane Center sent a message that this storm wasn't anything to be worried about.
I absolutely think that's part of it. I don't know that that's all of it, but my
I'm not suggesting that's all of it. But anyway, now I've forgotten my pick of the week. I'm stealing this one from Kevin. I'm stealing his source. Let's put it that way. He has on several occasions used Boston.com and Pictures or Big Picture. And they ever since I first saw them because of Kevin, I've noticed that they really do a fantastic job of capturing the essence of the story. And so mine is Boston.com/big picture, blah, 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 blah. Hurricane Sandy, the superstorm.
Well,
so that'll be my pick.
Let me say on that one, they've got so far, as of this recording, there are actually two separate Hurricane Sandy related clusters of photos.
Yeah.
So you can go to Brian's link, which I guess is going to one of them, but go to boston.com/big picture and you can scroll down their history. And right now, as I said, there are two that are really, really excellent. So
yes, now I'm not saying there aren't some other ones out there, because I ran across another one after I decided to use that one. So
yeah, post that one if you have a chance, that one that James originally sent you too, because that one was excellent. And the presentation was something I have. We've seen, you know, various, I assume this is HTML5. Presentations where you do before and after pictures, but if you can get it in, Brian, that one was excellent. It's the best I've seen, not of Sandy necessarily, but the presentation allowed you to scroll back and forth.
That's
as
JP's
opposed to clicking. Oh, JP. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, then let's go on to JP, and I'll let him repeat what I just said.
Yes, Kevin. As you said, just a very disturbing link. You know, basically, it's got interactive pictures of the New Jersey coast, and what you can do, as you said, is scroll back and forth and look at some of these damage, and actually do a screen share really quickly and show you that. Very disturbing to see that, because what it really just shows you is just how devastating the storm surge is with this hurricane.
Wow.
And you really just see, I mean, you know, you go down here, for example, and you just see just the devastation just from every single picture. You see houses just tossed, you know, around like matchsticks. Just incredible. You know, and of course, you know, it's just like with
hurricanes or tornadoes. You know, you really won't get the full picture unless you're there, but this gives you a really good idea of just how bad this was.
Yeah. Those are really fantastic, and the presentation is fantastic. I know you'll have the link, but what is the domain? What is the website for those?
I got this one off of abc.net.au, so it must be an Australian site from ABC News. But I saw a link from a message board and stole it from there and thought it was pretty interesting. Okay.
I didn't mean to steal your thunder there. I've been hanging around with your dad for too long, so apparently that was why I did that. Sorry about that. Hey, Dave Nussbaum, you got a pick of the week for us?
I found an interesting article here. Let's see if I can pull it up here. Where'd it go? The 7 New York City hurricane facts scarier than Frankenstorm Hurricane Sandy.
All right.
This goes out about different things would happen. Not necessarily funny, necessarily, but here, let me put this link up here. And,
yeah, if you can put it in the chat, then Brian can get it.
Yeah,
please do.
Take your time in doing that.
There we go.
How about Jeff? And, you got a pick of the week? Oh, I'm sorry. You're not done.
Nope. Go ahead.
You're That's done. It. Jeff, pick of the week?
My pick of the week is probably the photographer got up in a plane and flew over New York City when the city was dark at night. And they, as Con Ed shut off the power, and then the entire southern third of Manhattan was in pitch black. The guy took it from about 8,000, 9,000 feet south of town looking north. It was very telling of what was going on along the coast. It was very interesting. I think it's going to be on one of the magazines this week, but I'll find the link and post it here in a second.
Awesome. All right. Hey, Ryan, your turn. Pick of the week, sir.
Can I do my own blog?
Absolutely.
RyanHanrahan.com.
Fantastic. All right. Nate Johnson, you must have a pick of the week.
Hey, yeah, Kevin.
Yes, Brian.
You can't do that because it's already in our Weather Brains websites for the show.
Oh, well.
So he has to pick
I can come up with a new one. Hey, right, I'll do something non-Sandy related. How's that sound?
Okay.
How dare you?
So, I mean, we don't get much severe weather up in southern New England, but we have, this year, we've found great value in the dual polarization capabilities on all three of our local radars around here. So the Warning Decision Training Branch has a great website where they have dual pole storms of the month. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it's fantastic. They're great webinars. And just, you know, coincidentally, the radar out on Long Island on Upton actually picked up a tornadic debris signature for the tornado that hit Breezy Point on the Rockaways, which was subsequently basically swept away by Sandy. So they were hit by a tornado in, I believe it was September, and then they got the storm surge from Sandy. So you can see some cool stuff like that on there. So I check it out, even if you're not in an area that typically gets severe weather. Pretty cool stuff.
Fantastic. Dr. Johnson?
Dr. Fah. I have a link to the Talking Points memo map showing the Zone A areas that where New York City ordered mandatory evacuations relative to where deaths had been discovered. And if that, to me, the message of that is those evacuation areas are coded out like that for a reason.
Very good. Thank you, sir. My pick of the week comes from one of our guests, previous guests from the specials we did, David. I think they call him David Van because his actual name is too long to say, Vanden Hovel or something like that. But remember, he was from WDT and he forwarded an article. We were talking about computer models, and the title of this article, and it's from the Wall Street Journal, is Why America Has Fallen Behind in the World in Storm Forecasting. And maybe the first three quarters of it is stuff that we kind of talked about already, but the last paragraph or two have some really good thoughts and pretty interesting. So the link to that will be on weatherbrains.com. I've mentioned boston.com, and we wanted to talk about the pictures, which I mentioned a moment ago. One thing that I wanted to mention too with this next storm coming up for Wednesday, Thursday in the northeastern part of the country, Sandy took down a lot of branches and a lot of trees, but it also weakened a lot of branches and a lot of trees. And those, even though this next storm is technically not going to be as strong and the winds won't be as high, especially people in the Northeast or especially the broadcasters who listen to this podcast, I think we really ought to hit the importance of the weakened trees or branches that are going to come down in this next storm, take out more power or hit more cars or block more roads, which is one of the things that causes a lot of hardship, but is probably a little less covered, you know, little pockets here and there where people people have some sort of hardship or danger. You know, these some of the branches will hit some of these cars and things like that. So really be aware of the potential for falling trees and branches with the windy conditions of the next East Coast storm. And a shout out to our friends in Sydney. I looked it up. We're doing this. It's 10 o'clock local time for me in Dallas, Texas, but it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday in Sydney. So a shout out to those folks. Nate, I wanted to go back a couple of weeks, or was it last week? You're a professor. You teach a class. What's the name of that class again?
Broadcast meteorology, or special topics broadcast meteorology.
You said a week or two ago that you spent time, must have been last week, you spent time in class with your students critiquing the media presentations in the Northeast. And I would love it if you would spend a minute, since we have an extra minute or two, talking about what your thoughts were and their thoughts were.
Well, we put up the streams from a couple of local stations in the New York City area, because at this point, this was Monday, a week ago, the storm was pretty much making landfall. The center was coming on shore in New Jersey at this point. And one of the things we noticed was a stark difference in approach at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. One of these stations must have run through four or five meteorologists in what felt like a 5 or 6 minute block of very well-produced, tightly produced weather content. The chief meteorologist was leading all of this, but then going to other meteorologists to talk about storm surge and another meteorologist to talk about winds. It was clearly very well thought out, very well executed. Another station, I don't remember, I think the meteorologist did something briefly off the top, but we didn't really see much of them after that. And, you know, watching both, you know, going back and forth for the better part of an hour, you know, we saw the weather team from one station regularly. We didn't see them almost at all. It was a lot of reporters out talking about things and showing how the conditions were bad and that sort of thing, and stuff that's important and clearly can lend some reality to a situation that, you know, maps and graphics can't for a lot of folks. But it's a point, Kevin, that you made a number of times, in that if it's a weather event and it's still ongoing, the weather folks need to play a big role in that and need to be, you know, front and center with a lot of that coverage. It doesn't mean that they're doing the whole thing. It doesn't mean that they're anchoring it necessarily. Right. But we need to be checking in with the weather folks, because anymore, we're getting, you know, you've got live radars, we've got data, you know, even some of the government sensors are reporting data every 20 minutes. You've got a lot of fresh data coming in, you know, minute by minute, quarter hour by quarter hour. And I think we can continue to contribute that information, you know, as the coverage goes along, to keep that moving. I think we do our viewers a disservice if we, you know, spend an hour bouncing from live shot to live shot to live shot, showing people what's going on, but never put it into context and sort of the bigger picture. Here's where it is. Here's where it's going. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a balancing act. And I'm not sure, you know, one of the stations we watched, I'm not sure they struck it in my eyes, and students picked up on it as well. It's like, you know, when are we talking to, where's the weather guy?
Yeah. I'm fascinated.
Actually,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think we actually sort of fell into that at my station. I don't know if it was planned so much as it's sort of what evolved when we had three Mets on for about 12-hour shifts each. We sort of compartmentalized everything. Our chief sort of took the lead and did the nuts and bolts. And then the rest of us, we sort of, you know, I was basically doing storm surge. The other freelancer that we have was doing wind threat, inland and power outages, especially when you look at a hurricane as opposed to something like a winter storm, or, you know, even a tornado or severe weather. Mm-hmm. You have so many different hazards, and there's just an overwhelming amount of data to look at. For me, I was able to, you know, be in touch with the weather service, talking about surge and sort of focusing on that. And I think it helped our coverage quite a bit, because we could sort of, you know, I was sort of the point person on, you know, X, while someone else was focusing on something else. The weather service does a good job during storms, sort of compartmentalizing who does what. Sometimes they do it better than other times. But I think, you know, that's sort of how our coverage fell into place. And I think we did a pretty good job.
And to the extent that you can use that to play off what your reporters are seeing, you know, the really powerful coverage is when it's clear the reporters in the field are hearing and paying attention to what's being said in the studio. And vice versa, it's clear that the weather folks are paying attention to the live reports. And when you can play those off of each other and have, you know, your folks in the field saying, you know, Greg said this, you know, or I definitely see this coming through, or, you know, maybe I'm not saying, and it doesn't necessarily have to just be this constant love fest of Greg said it would be like this. It can be a Greg mentioned something and we're seeing something different. And can we get Greg on the line to explain maybe what we're seeing, or, you know, that's really interesting coverage and can help to motivate, you know, all of this, especially in times when maybe things aren't as exciting necessarily. And that tends to play well, you know, for winter storms as well as large scale events like a, you know, hurricane. I mean, we had some really good coverage, I thought, with Irene here, and some of the best moments that I thought were when it was clear that you had them listening to each other and they were engaged in the process, one with the other and back.
And I think one of the other things too that we sort of did on the fly is the meteorologist has to be proactive and talking to and engaging the reporters behind the scenes. We had, we probably had 8 or 9 live shots, people down by the water, great pictures at low tide. But at a certain point, you know, I was emailing them. I was like, you got to get out. Like, you know, the water is going to be rising real fast, and communicating with the reporters behind the scenes. You know, when you're updating Facebook, when you're updating Twitter, when you're building graphics, when you're on TV, when you're talking to the weather service, when you're talking to producers, it can skip your mind that, you know, you really need to help out your reporters out in the field. And, you know, you can't be angry after the fact when they say something that you didn't want them to say when you never talked to them in the first place. And I think that's important too. And it's important to realize how beneficial it can be when everyone's on the same page, even though you may not have the time every 45 minutes or hour to send out an email or call a reporter and say, hey, here's the deal. Here's what you're going to see. Let's make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah. I agree. I'll go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, even like down here, it's, you know, you live and learn through each every time you go through a system like that or a storm. We found it where our chief has actually been able to conduct, okay, this is what we're doing, here's the game plan, you know, we'll insert news as needed, but really it's all weather, you know, before and during landfall, then afterwards, you know, then kind of toss it over and then workhorse the break for the anchors. But like you were saying, to communicate with the reporters was huge. This past storm with Isaac, just outside of New Orleans, in La Place area, the head flood. We had reporters live down there reporting how bad it was before the surge came in. And fortunately, we pulled them out of there fast enough so they weren't affected by the surge. But in the same areas, you know, had they stayed there 30 more minutes, you know, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah. Well, and I think a good way maybe to quickly button this up and quickly communicate this to the news people, in my opinion, is just to say, look, a weather event usually transitions to a news event, but for a long time it's still probably for somebody in the market a weather event, and news people need to remember that, and you need to remind them of that. Those are all good points. All right, well, let's start wrapping it up. Dave, tell us where everybody can find you: Twitter, Facebook, websites, whatever you want to promote.
Yeah, you got me Facebook again. Just regular page, Dave Nussbaum, or meteorologist Dave Nussbaum. My Facebook pages, you can find me there. Also, Dave_Nussbaum on Twitter. You can find me on Google Plus. I'm just about anywhere you can find me on there. Weather blog on WBRZ.com. That's our website through our weather page. Updates seen all the time there.
All right.
About everywhere.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jeff, plug away, sir.
Okay. Hey, Jeff Petrosky. You can email me at jeffbsi@cox.net. You can also find me at Jeff on Twitter, at Jeff Petrosky. You can also find me, Jeff Petrosky, on Facebook as well. One last thing, a comment I would make, this has to go to people on the TV side, which I think is very important, but also think it's people make policies as far as watches and warnings from the Hurricane Center to NOAA people. I would highly advise for those people to take the time out over the next 30 days, go to the affected coast area, listen to the people, ask the right questions, and I think you'll have a total different policy moving forward. And I know Dr. Nab and people are looking at those kind of things as we move forward in this, advancing the both NOAA side and the hurricane side of how we deal with these big disasters.
Very good. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thank
Brian,
you.
Brian, we heard somewhere that you had a blog, and then Brian threw you under the bus.
Well, the blog's still there. RyanHanrahan.com. Talk about all sorts of geeky weather things. Twitter, at Ryan Hanrahan, or Facebook, Facebook.com/WeatherHanrahan.
All right. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us. At this point, we usually ask Bill to tell us what was coming up in future shows, but he's not here, and I don't have the vaguest idea, but I know it will be good stuff. So we usually do this program on Monday evenings at 8:30 Central Time. It is streamed live at live@bigbrainsmedia.com. It is also put out as a podcast. It's also a vodcast, I guess you want to call it, videocast, Google Hangouts. You can find it there. And all of that stuff is linked at our website, which is weatherbrains.com. All the host connection information, Facebook and Twitter, is there as well. As usual, I am not James Spann. Have a great week and God bless.